Hi, this is Troy Gwynn of the NashiCast. I want to welcome you to the Time Shifters Podcast. This podcast takes a fun look at the films of long past, recent past, and the almost present, as well as the events and news surrounding them. Your hosts, Christopher and Matt, would love to hear from you, and there are several ways to get in touch with them. Look for the Time Shifters Podcast group on Facebook. Follow the two on Twitter. Christopher is at Time Shifters Pod, and Matt is at Movies at the Mat. Or you can send them a typed or recorded message to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. Please rate and review the show at any of these outlets. Now, from the Time Shifter Studio, here are Christopher and Matt.
Everyone, and welcome back. Also, in addition to all that stuff, I also remind people to go and check out go to the webpage and look at the tabs at the top and click on check out the T Public store. And if you're going to do shopping on Amazon, click on that link over on the right. It'll help us out a little bit here and there. Matt, welcome back. How are you?
I'm all right. Tomorrow is my last day of grad school.
Congratulations. Thanks. It seems like that's gone really by really fast. Did you like accelerate a little bit? Because you were talking like, oh, I've got two more years or I've got this much time. And it suddenly it's like, oh, now you're done. I'm like,
yeah,
what happened?
So it is a short program. They call it a 2-year program. But technically, when you look at from your first class to your last class, it's less than 2 full calendar years, but it's 2 years worth of semesters.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, it's like a year and 3/4. But accelerated program, lots of stuff all at once, plus a master's project, and no sleep. So I'm good.
So expect a lot more movie watching from Matt in the near future.
I've already done that.
Check the Twitter feed is going to be exploding here real soon.
Yep. Twitter, my Instagram, all of it. Yep.
All right. Well, congratulations.
Thank
and
you.
Have fun from now on with all this extra free time that you're going to have.
Best I can.
Well, we have a little bit of news. Let's start with kind of the down story, I think. Just a couple days before we record, we found out that Peter Mayhew, who, you know, famous for bringing Chewbacca to life in the Star Wars from the original 77 film all the way to what, 2015 was his last appearance as Chewbacca. And then he was a consultant for the new guy. And, of course, he's been a part of the Star Wars universe this whole time, all these years. And yeah, he passed away age of 74. His health had been declining. He's had a lot of health problems, being, I think, what is it, 7'2".
Yeah.
That comes with
a lot of health issues.
And he's been fighting it. And he's been, I tell you what, he is a fighter. Unbelievable. He's gone through many surgeries, lots of exercises and stuff to fight to increase his mobility. He never gave up, and I think it's just a lot of things. Just finally, the actual cause of death I don't think has been revealed, but I think it's just a lot of stuff finally caught up.
Yeah,
but he was on the convention circuits, you know, whenever he could. There was a couple times that he had to bow out because of health reasons. Or because some surgery. A lot of times it was because, you know, a surgery schedule opened up kind of thing. And he needed to do this to, you know, some surgery on his back or on his legs or something. He had to cancel a convention. But otherwise, he would have been there.
Yeah, that's the thing I always remember about him is that he was at a lot of cons and he was always there for the fans. And fans were always there for him, too. He wasn't one of those like, oh, there's no line at that guy's table. It's like, no, there was always a line and he was always happy to meet and talk with people.
Yes, absolutely. Everything. Actually, despite the fact that he was probably at a half a dozen cons that I've been to, I never really took the time to go and meet the man. I wish I had at least gone up and shook his hand and said hello. But everything that I hear from all the other fans that did and who have talked with him just said exactly what you said, that he was just always very open, very friendly, and just happy to be there and happy to have this fandom. And I think that's one of the really kind of great things of like the Star Wars fandom. Maybe a little bit in just science fiction fandom in general, is that the role of Chewbacca could have been a very thankless role.
Sure.
There's no reason we should know who the guy was that wore the suit, but we do.
Yeah.
Same with Anthony Daniels in the
C-3PO
and Kenny Baker. You know, we, as fans, embrace these people, despite the fact that we never see their face, in some cases never hear their voice. and we embrace them. We invite them to these conventions, and like you said, the line's a mile long because we get a chance to we get a chance to say hello to these people, and I think it means a lot to them because I think in any other genre, really, almost any other genre, you wouldn't have that,
right?
You know, it's just. I like that we kind of embrace and realize that the people behind the masks are just as important as the people that we see their faces and hear their voices.
Yeah.
You know, they bring a little something of themselves to that role. So, yeah, that was kind of sad news. It was, he was 74, so still a good long life. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he will be missed by a lot of people.
Yeah.
Still a little bit of sad, but it's kind of moving into the trailers. The Sonic the Hedgehog trailer. Oh,
I couldn't even finish it.
That just looks awful.
I've never...
Forget the visual. I know a lot of people are complaining about how Sonic looks.
Uh-huh.
Forget that.
It's a bad trailer.
It's just not a good trailer. And it doesn't look like an entertaining film.
I've never turned off a trailer. 2 minutes, I can sit through that. Couldn't do it. I got frustrated. It just cut every which way. I didn't care. I was like, I'm not going to see this movie.
No.
And no, and he looks awful. And looks so awful that the backlash got all the way to the director, who was like, okay, I hear you. We're going to redesign him. Before the movie comes out.
My issue is like that's not going to fix it.
No.
Not from what I've seen in that trailer. It just doesn't look fun.
It looks like a mess. And you know what? Sonic the Hedgehog, as a character, as a video game franchise, is also a mess. So it's fitting. Like, there's not that many great Sonic the Hedgehog games. There's a handful that are, some good ones, and then a lot of bad ones. Like, a lot of bad ones.
Okay. I was never, that was a Sega, wasn't it? I was never the Sega player, so I obviously knew of Sonic the Hedgehog, and I probably sat down and played it at a friend's house or something once or twice, but other than just the fact that, yeah, you're really fast and you run and you collect rings.
That's it?
That's all I know about Sonic the Hedgehog. Not really seems like, doesn't seem like a lot to base a movie on, but.
They did it for Mario Brothers. That was kind of the same thing, too.
I guess that's true.
Not that that's a great
bar. I was
going to
say, we're a little split on whether that was successful or not.
So, yeah. I have no intention of seeing that movie. I remember the very first teaser poster. It's from his point of view, and you just see, like, his legs as he's sitting on top of, I think, like, the Golden Gate Bridge or whatever it is. And after this trailer came out, and it looked so bad, I thought, you know what? The whole movie should have been first person. Sonic the Hedgehog. Do that. You know, it's already going to be garbage. Just make it even worse.
Obviously, it's just a trailer. So, is the trailer just poorly done, or is the movie just a bunch of a mess? I don't know. The trailer for Dora and the City of Gold or whatever.
Oh yeah, the Dora the Explorer movie.
The Dora the Explorer is going to be a live action film. It came up in front of
something.
It's something, and I was sitting there watching it. And at first, I thought, "Oh God, Dora the Explorer, really making a live action?" But by the end of the trailer, I was like, "Holy crap, I want to see this movie!"
I kind of had a similar reaction.
This looks like a lot of fun,
right? It seems like it's a good movie to like bring your teenage kids to.
Yeah,
and I'm because I was sitting there going, "Who is this?" Four, like you can't bring the kids that are watching Dora on Nick Jr. right now, but then other kids are going to be like, Dora, I don't want to watch that. That's what, you know, babies watch. But then I'm thinking like, no, that seemed like a fun family action movie.
I told my son, who's 14, I was like, there's this Dora trailer. You should watch it. It looks like a lot of fun. He's like, no, he's not going to. I don't want to watch that. That sounds stupid. He wouldn't watch it. Well, I took him with me to see Shazam. And in front of Shazam, there's the Dora trailer. So I'm like, aha, he doesn't have a choice. So I watch it. I turn to him like, well, he's like, that looks fun.
Yeah. It looks funny.
See?
Yeah. I like how it's this whole idea of they know it's ridiculous. And so like all of the other kids that are with Dora think she's ridiculous. Yeah,
of course she's got a knife.
Right.
That's... Of course she knows the monkey.
Yeah. That's just good lines like that. The movie is aware of itself. And so it's just like, come on. Enjoy this ride. We know what it is. You'll know what it is.
It's just a great example of this two sides of the coin where your initial thought is, why would you make a movie about that? But then you make a movie and then one is, there's no way I'm going to go see this. And the other one is, that looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Whoever sat down and wrote that script, because I think they asked themselves that question. Like, how do I bring people into this? okay, the movie will be aware of itself.
Well, it kind of gives us feel of like maybe they, the people that like grew up with Dora, they're kind of like, because the Dora looks like she's a teenager or something, yeah, by this film, where in the original Dora cartoon,
she's a kid.
She's just very young or whatever. So
like
I feel
grade
like
school.
I feel like they kind of aged along, or they decided to age the film along with the viewers or
yeah,
something. So I don't know. It looks like a lot of fun. So
it
I'm
does.
Actually probably actually going to watch that one.
Based on the trailer, I hope that movie does well, because
yeah,
they cared about it.
It just looked like a fun adventure film. Mm-hmm. I mean, forget the whole idea about Dora and Boots and all that. I don't care. It just looked like a fun, like, Indiana Jones-style
right,
adventure film.
If you plucked her out and put somebody else in, some original character, no one would have anything negative to say
yeah,
about this movie.
It'd just be a fun kids adventure film.
Right.
Yeah.
Last time we talked about Disney Plus
mm-hmm,
and all of that stuff that's going on. And then this past week, I heard a rumor that they are considering doing a TV series based on Willow.
Yeah, thank you. I did read that the other day.
That needs to happen. More than any other series I've heard teased, that needs to happen. And we need Warwick Davis talking about thankless actors
yeah,
in a costume. That's almost his entire career. Yeah, need a Willow series. I am down for a Willow series. I love that movie.
All right. I'm sure it's one of those movies where I'm sure I watched it, you know, back in the old VHS day kind of thing. Haven't watched it since.
It's a fun movie. Good,
yeah,
good high fantasy movie. I think written by George Lucas, and I know it was directed by Ron Howard. And now because Ron Howard's attached with Disney after doing Solo,
mm-hmm,
he's kind of in that office now. He's in
right,
that room, and he's part of this now. He wants to make
it happen.
I've had
this idea.
Right.
Yeah.
How
hey,
to bring
Kathleen.
Willow. Right, exactly. Let's bring Willow back. Okay.
Yeah. I could definitely see where a fantasy series with a decent budget behind it
yeah,
would work really well. Well, I mean, you look at like something like Game of Thrones, which is obviously not a family series
no,
orientated or anything, but it's still, you know, it's the sword and magic and,
right,
and everything. Look how popular that has been.
Right.
Why not do it for, you know, a more family audience or a more general audience, I should say.
Sure.
I absolutely. I mean, if it's done well, I'm all for it.
Anything that gives Warwick Davis work, I'm down for.
Yeah, and they're actually attached, and he's actually kind of being attached or
I haven't heard his name specifically. They just keep saying a series based on Willow, and I'm like, well, he's Willow.
Right.
So if he's not in it, I'm going to have a problem with this.
Maybe they could start it with, you know, him telling the tales and
right,
cast
whatever,
a younger actor.
That's
and,
fine.
Because obviously he's a lot older than he was 1980. When was Willow? That was
88,
early
89,
80s, mid 80s. Oh, was
like
that far? Late
yeah, because
okay,
it was after Return of the Jedi.
Oh. Hmm.
And I think he was like 18, 19, like when that movie got made. He was.
Oh,
young,
really? Oh.
Something like that. Because, you know, he was a kid in Return of the Jedi. So, yeah, it was like.
I had the age of Warwick Davis. Oh, I thought he was older than that.
No.
All right.
But yeah, I am down for that.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. And yeah, the Disney Plus streaming service is sounding more and more like
gotta
something you're
it,
not going to be able to pass up.
Especially for $6.99.
Yeah, exactly.
So because I'm finishing grad school, I went and saw some movies.
Yay, good.
I went and saw Shazam.
Yes.
I went and saw Us.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then I went and saw Avengers Endgame.
All right, I have not seen Endgame yet.
Oh, okay.
Or Us. I haven't seen Us yet either. A little 50-50 on the reviews on Us. There's a lot of people I see it that really love it, others that are wondering what the deal was.
They were wrong. That
yeah,
movie is so good. It terrifying.
Yeah, I really liked it.
I was uncomfortable. I was freaked out. It was one of those things that until the credits started to roll, I didn't feel I could relax.
You needed them lights to come up?
Yeah, exactly. incredible writing, incredible acting from Lupita Nyong'o.
Mm-hmm.
She was wonderful playing the dual roles of her character and the doppelganger.
Right.
Completely different. Both amazing. The family, not at all. Like, that trailer only shows you, for the most part, what happens in the first act.
Oh, really?
A little bit into the second act. And then one or two clips from the third act.
Leaves
like,
a lot.
There's a
the
lot
film,
left.
Nice.
There's so much that I did not expect to happen that happened. Very, very good movie and had a lot to say. Great allegory.
Nice, good. Now I'm looking forward to seeing it. It's unfortunately, you know, trying to see the movies that you want to see and finding the time and whatever is can be a little tough when you've got a job and a family and well, grad school. But you're no stranger to that.
Yeah, but Shazam, we've both seen now. I really like that movie.
It was fun.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
My only, I guess, issue is the fact that as this movie was being made was when they were saying, like, oh, we're going to kind of tone down this whole shared universe thing. And this movie relied on the fact that the other superheroes existed.
Yes.
Especially that very last scene. It's like, you could have cut that. You didn't need that at all.
Right.
The rest was fine. Mm-hmm. The rest was absolutely fine.
Yeah, there was references to Batman. There was references to Superman throughout the film. So, yeah.
Wonder Woman, the kid's wearing an Aquaman shirt. Yeah. He could have just been like a superhero nerd. Like, it didn't have to be based on real superheroes. They could have left it up in the air. Do they exist? Do they not exist?
Yeah, does this take place where in a universe where superheroes exist? Or is this our world where now Shazam exists?
Right. Yeah. But no, it was clearly, definitively, the world is aware of the Justice League.
Right.
Aquaman has happened. So I guess there is still a shared universe. Or are they going to pull back now? It's like, well, that played. That worked. That helped. What are you doing? Pick a lane.
No, it was a lot of fun. I was, you know, amazed that the film could actually pull out in the end a few surprises.
Mm. I did not expect what happened in that last fight to happen in this movie.
Nope.
I'm looking at all of those characters. I'm like, all right, I see where you're going for this with the sequel. Oh, you're doing it now. Okay. Whoa.
Yeah. Wasn't expecting that
at
all.
No, not at all. I was like, all right, movie two is set up. Oh, gotcha.
I was a little hesitant going in because I was afraid of the humor that they had in the trailer. It was like, if it's too much of this, it isn't going to work for me. In the end, I thought it was fine. I mean, I really...
They balanced it.
They balanced it really well. I'm still kind of torn on the idea of... And maybe it's just me not having read the comics. I don't know what it was like in the comics, the old Captain Marvel or Shazam comics. I always had the impression that it was like two separate people that existed that were, you know, that it wasn't the same person. He just now happens to be in a grown-up, you know, his perfect physical form. Right. Which is how this movie plays. He's still a 14, 15-year-old kid in a grown adult body with all these superpowers.
In the comics, it's more of this is still Billy who has been imbued with all of these things. So it is an adult version of him. So it's still him, but it's imagine him if the wisdom of Solomon had now come into his mind. Right. So it's more like it's one personality that has this stuff, and then the other version of the same personality that doesn't have this stuff.
Right.
So it kind of depends on, like, how you argue that. So they just went full on, it's a kid in a superhero body. Yes. But I guess you could argue that he was a little bit smarter as Shazam because he thought up of things that he may not have thought up of as a kid. So he does have the wisdom of Solomon. So
we'll see. It's a character that I would love to see continue. That was definitely what I came away from this film, is like, okay, I want to see more Shazam.
Yeah.
Whether it's in his own film, whether he joins the DCU and pops up in other films, I don't care. I want to see more of the character.
And now I'm sitting here going, okay, they're having issues. Like, Ben Affleck is out as Batman. They're having issues with Henry Cavill as Superman. Who cares? We have Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and Shazam to be this new trinity to lead things. And I'm fine with that. As weird as that sounds, that's our three people up front, let's do it. Make the Justice League around those three. You know, if we can finally get a Flash movie, maybe that'll be good. If we can get a Green Lantern movie, maybe that'll be good. But if it's just those three for right now and we build around them, I'm down for that.
I would get a big kick. Can you imagine, you know, 15-year-old Billy as Shazam hanging out with Wonder Woman.
With Wonder Woman and Aquaman. Yeah.
Well, it's just him. He's a 15-year-old boy, and suddenly he's facing off against Gal Gadot is Wonder Woman. Hi.
Yeah. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Zachary Levi is amazing being a guy playing a child.
Yeah, he was a 15-year-old.
Right. Yeah. I really feel him. I can't remember the name of the kid that played Billy, but I feel like the two of them worked together to work out this character.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a wonderful job with it.
Yeah, I can't think of his name. It was it's an odd name. The young kid has.
I can't remember.
I can't think of it. Sorry, buddy. No, it was. It ended up being just a really fun film. It was like a little over 2 hour long, but it zipped. It didn't feel like it.
No. One other thing that kind of irked me a little bit about the movie. This is semi-spoilery. Sure. If you don't want to hear it, skip forward a minute or two. The whole thing with his mom.
Dark.
When he finally finds his mom, it's clear she's in an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie just walks away from it.
Yeah.
I was waiting for a post-credit scene where Shazam shows up and rescues her,
mm-hmm.
punches out the dick boyfriend, something that didn't happen.
No. That whole storyline. When we find out what happened and how it all went down, it's all very dark and disturbing. I'm like, that's like the most frightening part of this movie.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Forget the monsters and the sins and all of that.
Right. That's the most frightening thing, and you're right. And they just kind of like, oh, well, okay.
Like, she looks like she has old bruises on her face still fading away. It's like, is anyone going to go save her? It's his mom.
Right.
I get that he didn't get what was happening, but we got it. And it's over.
Yeah.
I'm like, somebody rescue her.
No, I agree.
That better come back. She better not be stuck in that apartment the rest of her life.
Even if it's the next film that he's in, you know, the next Shazam film or whatever, and he makes some, you know, I just got back. I had to go help my mom or something. Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything. Acting all across the board, I thought was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Kid actors is always a crapshoot. And this film had a lot of them, and they...
That little girl
made the film.
Oh, my gosh.
She made the film.
She was wonderful. Give her a spinoff. She's great. And then the actress that plays the other version is...
Spoiler.
We're spoiling it. I can't not.
Yeah, it's very hard not to talk about this, because some of the best moments, you have to spoil the film.
She was great, too.
She was.
But yeah, good movie all around. Definitely recommend it. DC's finally putting things back on the rails a little bit.
I saw one just quick tweet review said that DC finally made a decent Superman movie. It's called Shazam.
Right. Yes. This is what Superman should have been. It's so sad that Zack Snyder came in and was like, I want moody, depressed Superman. That's not what he is.
Right. Yeah. He's supposed to be the glowing beacon of hope.
Right.
Not broody. That's Batman's territory.
He wanted to do a Batman film, but they gave him a Superman movie.
Yeah. Yeah, bad call on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Shazam, go check that out for sure.
You need to go check out Endgame.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, is that a good movie?
I don't know what it is about the Marvel films. They don't make me want to see them. I mean,
really?
I want to see them, but I'm just like, yeah, I'll get to it.
This movie's so good.
Yeah.
It's pure fan service, and I don't care.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I've been trying to kind of figure it out in my own head what it is about some of these films that just don't pull at me.
Don't do it for you?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy them when I watch them.
Did you like the Spider-Man movie?
Yes, I actually did. Yeah.
Okay.
The
Homecoming.
Homecoming, yeah. That's actually one that the Far From Home.
That's out in a few months.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to that one. I don't know what it is about, like the Spider-Man. Avengers film, or it's just certain characters kind of pull me like, okay, that looks good. I want to see that. And others are just kind of like, yeah, I'll watch that. I'll get to it. I mean, I only just watched, what was the previous of the...
Captain Marvel?
No, the Avengers...
Infinity War.
You know, I watched that much later on Blu-ray or something like that, after I was on the hold list from the library or something, finally got it and watched it.
And like, that didn't make you want to know what happens next? No.
I mean, I do, but it's not like I just don't feel like I
I didn't have to go see
I didn't have to be there on that opening weekend. Or I'm still trying to kind of like skip through the spoiler articles and stuff like that. If I see something that I think might be a spoiler, I still try to skip it a little bit. But in the end, yeah, I'll get around to it. It's just some characters, some movies pull me in, and some just like, that's nice.
All right.
I don't know what it is.
Well, that's all I got.
Yeah, I think that's all I had too. That's not a lot of big news stories, and we talked a few trailers and stuff, so that's about it. So we will take a break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about 2013's Haunter.
Hello, everyone. I am Rod Barnett.
I'm Troy Gwynn.
And we are your hosts for NashyCast, the podcast about the films of Paul Nashy. We, for over 5 years, have brought you the joys of Spanish cinema, filtered through our brains to you.
Yes. Now, what is it that qualifies two Southern boys to talk about films that came out of Spain? And I can't think of a single thing.
There's nothing that qualifies.
Nothing. Except that we just love them.
We love them. NashyCast covers the films of Paul Nashy and any other Spanish horror film that we can pretend we know something about.
Yes. If you love beautiful women wearing incredibly short miniskirts in subarctic temperatures, chased by werewolves in leisure suits.
If you love werewolves, vampires, unidentifiable beasts, or crazy people driving women around and talking like a maniac.
Yes, flying cats, beheadings with axes.
Blood that looks like melted crayons.
Shambling zombies,
Some of the films that we've covered in the past are Mark of the Werewolf,
Howl of the Devil,
Vengeance of the Zombies,
Horror Rises from the Tomb,
Tombs of the Blind Dead,
Vampire's Night Orgy.
Ooh, yes. Join us on this journey through the golden age of Spanish horror, where Paul Nashy, Leon Klimovsky, Jess Franco, Armando D'Osorio take us through a filter Espanol.
Join us for the Nashy Cast.
Right, Haunter is a film that came off of my list of films that I wanted us to discuss, and it was a film I just sort of kind of stumbled on a little bit by accident, I think. Oh, I think it was about the time I decided I wanted to give the film Splice a rewatch. I saw it when it was in the theater and walked away with it going, meh. It's one of those films where I feel like it was the parts were greater than the whole kind of thing. And I had spoken and interviewed to the director of Splice right before that came out for the film Splice, Vincenzo Natali. And it got me thinking, I was like, I wonder what else he's done. And I started looking through, and I found Haunter. He directed this film. It was
I think that was his follow-up to Splice.
It was. It was the film that he did right after Splice. And he said it was, I actually watched the his commentary for this film in prep, and he was saying this was kind of like almost a vacation. After it took so long to do Splice, it was kind of nice doing this film. It was done in like 25 days.
Yeah, just all really, filmed in one place,
It really felt like it was a nice change of pace.
Sure.
So that's how I discovered this film. And the first time I watched it, I don't remember if I brought it home from the library or if I discovered it on some streaming service or something like that. I watched it, and it surprised the heck out of me. Because I was like, really wasn't sure what I was getting myself into. You know, didn't know anything about it. So I watched the film, and then in the end, I'm like, I wouldn't have expected any of that, even if someone told me about it. So it really impressed me. It was a film that impressed me. So I was like, okay. You go look at the IMDb and go through some of the user reviews, and it's kind of like split across the board. People either really like this film or people absolutely hate this film. It doesn't seem like to be a lot of middle ground for it. So I was really curious to get your opinion on it. You always see a little deeper. You dive a little deeper in a lot of films than I do. So I was curious to get your opinion on it.
So I guess my reaction to this is probably similar to your reaction to Splice, that I felt that there were parts better than the whole. Because it starts out one way, it transitions to another way, and then it ends a completely different way. So I looked at it as you didn't focus on any one thing, because it starts out as this teenage girl the day before her 16th birthday, living in a house with her mom, her dad, her younger brother. This horrible thick fog has descended on the whole town, so there's nowhere to go. It's affecting the phone lines. There's no one to call. And we discover she's stuck in a time loop, and she's the only one aware of the time loop. And I just kept thinking, like, thick fog and the way she's acting, because she's sort of like going along with the time loop. And every time her mom every day is like, go do the laundry, she's like, I've done the laundry. Mm-hmm. You just don't remember. The way she was acting, I was like, is this movie an allegory for depression? Is this what it felt like? Is like, is that okay. What the fog is? You can't get out. There's nowhere to go. It's the same routine. She has that argument with her parents of like, we do the same thing every day. Like, what do you mean? Like, you know, there is no work tomorrow. What do you think? You're not going to accomplish anything? I'm like, this is about depression, right? This is the sci-fi for depression. And then all of a sudden, she realizes she's dead, literally. And her family is dead. And that she's the ghost in her own house, and that it's actually like 2016, and that there's another family living in the house, and then she somehow is able to get into the modern world, and she can see an iPad and a computer and the modern furniture. And then you realize, well, how did they die? Because they were murdered by the ghost of a serial killer who's still collecting people.
Yes.
And I'm just sort of like, that's a lot. Like, that is not where the movie started. I was expecting, like, a sci-fi, and then it went full on into psychological paranormal horror.
Thriller.
Yeah. And it's like, you took a lot from all of these columns, but you never fully established any of them.
See, I think that's what I appreciate most about the film, is that it is this blend of, if you want to call it the sci-fi because of the time loop. Because
that's how it's solid as that for like 20-30 minutes before they get into any of those other genres, before any of the creeping sounds or the shadows or anything like that. It's just her in a loop over and over and over again. I'm like, all right, it's Groundhog Day, whatever.
Yeah. No, I think that's what I love about the film. It has this little bit of the time loop edge, and then it turns into this mystery.
Yeah.
And then it turns into, okay, now it's paranormal.
Right.
And now it's a bit of a thriller, and then it's a murder mystery, all wrapped up into this old dark house kind of trope. I think I liked the fact that it crossed all these genres.
I did too.
And it blended them together.
Yeah. I liked it. It just, you never got a fully realized version of any of them, and then the movie's over.
I think by blending them all together, it kind of creates its own thing. I don't think it needed to be any one or the other. I just really appreciated that it was all of them.
Yeah.
And I thought it accomplished using all of these and blending them together. I thought, for the most part, it accomplished what it was set out to do, to make an entertaining film.
And I was wanting more. That's kind of how, like, there are certain highs for me. I'm like, okay, really good. And then after a certain point, I guess when she kind of travels into present day, the movie slowly just starts to go down for me. Because then I'm just sort of like, well, now we're just filling in the blanks until we get to the inevitable conclusion of we've won the day.
Well, we got to solve the mystery.
You can solve the mystery, but I felt like I saw all of those parts coming before they happened. I'm like, well, now she's going to do this, and now she's going to do that. Because once we kind of got a good idea of, okay, everybody connects because they touch an object that another person once owned, because he's a serial killer and he takes a trophy. And when you touch it, you connect with the spirit of the person who died. I'm like, all right, that's all she's got to do. She's just got to find all of the little magic whatevers, and that's what's going to happen. Guess what? That's what happened. And so I'm just waiting for it to happen now at that point. I like a mystery that I don't know what's going to happen.
Gotcha. All right. Fair enough. I still found myself not knowing how it was going to end.
Okay.
What did you think? And this is one of the things that I thought carried the film for me, was our lead actress.
She was great. I've seen her in a few things.
Abigail Breslin.
Yeah.
And she was, I think, Natalie said she had just turned 16 when they did this film. So she was almost
right
at the right age. She has to carry the film almost entirely on her own.
She was great. She no problems with her acting or how she portrayed. You know, I like the whole idea that she's being threatened by this pale man that she can't figure out. you know, don't listen to any of the voices you hear. Don't contact the living. Don't do this. And yeah.
This is my house, Lisa. Right?
And yeah. She's essentially like, I'm gonna. She is not deterred at all. She right. keeps. She's scared.
Mm-hmm.
She's absolutely terrified, but she keeps going, and that's what I love about her character. That there's a believability to that.
Yeah. No, I thought she was fantastic. It was one of those brief moments when those actors where you're just like, "Holy crap, do more work."
Mm-hmm. And she has. She's been in several things, and yeah, I look forward to her career. I think she was. In Little Miss Sunshine, I think she was the young girl in
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like where she kind of got her start yeah. or whatever, and got a lot of critically acclaimed for that, and then kept, you know, acting in other roles. I don't think she hasn't done anything really major, which is
sure.
a little bit unfortunate. It's kind of like, I hope she's doing things that she really wants to do, and like maybe, you know, roles that mean something to her, but on the other hand, I want to see this woman like, you know, in something big so everyone will know that she's as good as she is. The rest of the cast, it's a lot of names that, you know, character act people that, like people that you think, have I seen that person in something before?
Right.
And it's
especially
possible.
The pale man.
Yeah.
I've definitely seen him in things before. Yeah.
And most of the case, it's probably going to be some spot on some television show or a minor yeah. role in a small role in a film or whatever. But all of them did really good. Yeah, the pale man, Stephen McHattie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not a name I recognize, but a face you can't forget.
Yeah, he's creepy around. Just from not emoting. Yeah.
And they do a great job. And this is, I think, maybe lends a little bit more to Natalie as a director in that he did a really great job of just finding the right way to make when something needed to be creepy. I mean, when he first shows up and he's effectively just in silhouette and he's a very thin man and he's got the oversized mirror sunglasses and it just gives you this very odd, off-putting feeling as soon as you see him. And it's yeah. like, nice job.
Yes. The bad guy has entered. Yeah, there's exactly. no doubt about what has just yeah. happened. I also like the idea that we're just sort of plopped into this world. There's
yes.
no explanation for what's going on.
Yes.
There's no like text before the movie. Like you have to kind of piece this together almost as she's piecing
yeah,
it
Lisa
together.
Lisa is actually several days, if not weeks, ahead of us.
Right.
Because
I think she said like she's been awake for about a week. So she's right. still new yeah. to this.
Right. But she's still several days into the story
right.
before we are.
And
I love
so
it.
We're just dropped into it because I'm sitting there going, what the hell is happening. There's the mm-hmm. part where she goes up to the attic and she grabs the Ouija board and she starts to try to communicate. And I'm like, okay, she's trying to communicate with a ghost. And she even says like, are you dead? Are you alive? And I'm like, wait, are that's you alive?
Odd question. Yeah.
Right. I was so confused by that. But that's when I started to realize, oh, she's a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I like that whole idea of we're seeing a haunting from the ghost's point of view.
A little bit like that. What was the one with Nicole Kidman?
The others. Mm-hmm. Which I've never seen, but yeah.
Oh, that was another one that yeah. I mean, you. I guess you know the surprise.
Right.
But
it's one of those things that once it got out there, it was out there.
Right. But it was, I'm watching it, and like I said, I watch a film, and I'm like on the surface, and like, I didn't see it coming. It's like, oh, is that right. what's happening?
Yeah. So I'm sitting there going, are they going to reveal that this whole family's dead? Like, her word choices clearly indicated she's aware of something that we're not.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I like when you're just sort of dropped into a scenario and you don't get all of this backstory and you have to figure it out. And that's part of the fun. But then I just got to a point where I've put all the pieces together, but you haven't.
Oh, right. You caught up and now you're...
Right. I got ahead of the character because mm-hmm. I saw things that I've seen in other movies and,
right.
you know, I've read in other stories. And now I'm just sort of like, we getting to the end yet? Because I'm there.
Okay. No, I see your point. And yeah, I probably did the same thing. I'm sure I did the same thing. But I on the other hand, was like, okay, now I want to see how you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, we have to get to this end, but I want to see how you go about it.
Right.
You know, so I was still excited to see what transpired or how they got there,
mm-hmm.
even though I knew most likely what the end was going to be.
Sure.
But not necessarily. Again, if you ever watch Cube,
no.
That was like Vincenzo Natali's first kind of I don't know if it was his first film, but it was like the first one he got a lot of acclaim for. It was a little small, low-budget sci-fi film. One you should definitely go check out.
Okay.
Is someone who appreciates doing a lot with very little.
Mm.
You have a set, and they just use lights to kind of say, oh, no, it's another room. And but it's really neat, and it's an ending. I mean, you can sit there and take your bets, but...
Probably not going to be right.
You may not be right.
Okay.
Definitely check out Cube.
Okay. I've heard of that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was looking at his other work on IMDb, and he's done a lot. Like, he's done episodes, like he did an episode of Luke Cage. He did a bunch of episodes of Hannibal.
Mm-hmm.
I think he worked on Orphan Black quite a bit. So, yeah, he's got a good filmography to his name.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate him as a director. I don't think all his films are great. Or like I said, just there are certain things that just like Splice just I liked where they went and then it just fell apart. And then I don't know how much of it was how much was it the story? How much was it the studio going, okay, that's great, but can you make it more like this? You know,
tries things. You can definitely tell him that. He's not just, you know, going along with the motions.
Right. It's interesting. His career, he started out as a storyboard artist.
Mm.
He was a storyboarder.
Oh, yeah, I saw
that. And then moved into directing. And so I kind of see where his directing style is very, things are planned.
Right.
You know, he knows, and I think that's why some of the stuff works as well as it does, because I don't feel like it's like, okay, let's try this. It wasn't filmed. And then, okay, now let's do this. Let's put a little graphic in his eye make it the one thing where she looks into his eye and you see like a skull.
Yeah,
I don't think that was thought of after the fact.
That was always part of it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and I think that benefits from the actual storyboard mindset of planning everything out, so you know exactly what you need to film in order to get what you want at the end.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think that also probably explains that whole idea of being dropped into a story. Like, I almost imagined that this whole longer movie was written with the intention of saying, and we're cutting out this part,
right?
Because we just needed to understand where these characters are coming from. So throw that part out,
yeah.
And we're on day seven. Wait, right. We're not using that? Nope.
Yeah, I'd actually be interesting to read. Brian King is the writer for this.
Yes.
I'd be really interested to read like the original scripts or the original ideas. Apparently, Natalia and King are friends, and they often pass scripts back and forth to each other as sounding boards.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that this was, you know, this went through, he saw this at the earliest stages, and it went back and forth. And I'd be real curious to see if there was a lot more buildup, and then they just decided, you know what, we don't need that.
Yeah.
we'll figure it out. So let's just drop it. It'd be really interesting to learn. Visuals in the film. Again, this is, you know, a small budget movie, few handful of actors, not a big cast, not really, you know, other than when they show up maybe for a few seconds, kind of,
yeah,
for a few minutes, all taking place in a set, which then they just redecorate as they need, you know, for the different
time periods.
Thank you. And so, but the visuals, real nice mix of practical and then using the visual, the computer, the CGI, you know, sparingly just to enhance, which is what I've always think is the best mix. So I appreciate that for this film. There's that great scene where her family, you know, Edgar has made them fall asleep, and then they emaciate in front of her and turn into the skeletons and everything. All done mostly practical.
Yeah.
And then enhanced with visual effects. Like,
that's the way to do it.
Nicely done.
Yes.
So other than that, everything was a lot of in camera and just setting the tone.
Right.
Just
good lighting.
Dial down the lights a little bit, add some shadows, and suddenly it's spooky.
Yeah, those are the parts that kind of got me the most, where it was just like just walking down a dark hallway, opening a door, and it's just pitch black on the other side of the door. And I'm like, why would you walk in there? Go get a light. What are you doing?
Exactly.
Get the hell out of the house. Oh, you can't. Okay, got it. Things like that.
It made me think you were talking about the Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter and how they were using light and everything. And when I was watching this film, it was very obvious that in her world, her time, everything's very kind of muted. It's gold. Mm-hmm. No sunlight coming in because outside is nothing but fog. So everything is lit by just yellow incandescent lights.
Yeah.
So it all has that yellow gold feel and everything. And then, of course, when she manages to find her way to 2013, 2015, whatever it is, sunlight, it's bright, it's white.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very different. Mm-hmm. Lets you know immediately she's not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah. Same when she finds herself in the 50s briefly.
Yeah.
You know, it's
even darker.
it's darker. Yeah. It's not the same as her
right.
world.
Different bulbs, smaller mm-hmm. bulbs kind of thing. Yeah.
Exactly. So done really well to right. just kind of set each tone and really give you an idea of where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
You almost feel like by the end of the movie, you could be in the same room and just by the light, you'd know where you were.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got in that time. Feeling. Like, they just change up the wall. Like, they use the same set. They change up the wallpaper. They change up the lighting. And you know exactly, I'm 20, 30 years in the future or 20, 30 years in the past. Didn't need any. There's no text on the bottom that says what year it is. You got it. You know where you are. You know when you are. That was really good storytelling.
I like that they did a good job of when she finds herself. You know, she's a 1980s girl. And suddenly finds herself in 2013, 2015. And yeah, there's the iPad that says play me. And she's like,
I don't know how to do this.
What is yeah.
Right. She
but
just bats at it.
It has the play symbol, which she's familiar with because there's still, you know, the VHS and Betamax.
Right.
Or the cassette player.
I loved
player.
That old VCR that was in the attic.
It was Beta. That was a good old Beta. Yeah. So at least it was a symbol that she recognized, but she didn't. So she just kind of does the smack.
Right.
I mean, like, what do you do? What do I do with this thing?
Never seen it before.
I just, I like that it wasn't, they thought about it. You
right.
know?
Good thing those symbols haven't changed.
Yeah, exactly. the only thing that I kind of knocked it for, and I didn't remember this when watching this film again a second time, was the very end. I felt like they got to the point that's kind of like, well, what do we do?
That was my feeling.
The very, very end, you know, the villain is defeated, and they're like, and then they came out of the one like, well, what should we do now?
Mm-mm.
And I
could have ended it on that note. You could have cut to black.
Yeah, I almost wish they had, because in the end, it's just this happy, syrupy,
right.
What's out there? Whatever you want. Like,
doesn't have
wow
to.
No, you didn't need this. So that's it. She goes through this purgatory or whatever, this hell of living the same day over and over, and the reward is now she gets to continue her life but dead,
right? Her family's together, they live together, she can go explore the whole galaxy if she wants to
or something.
Yeah,
I
she's I guess it's like it's the idea of in heaven a perfect afterlife, and I'm like, I didn't want that.
Yeah.
I wanted, we've got the guy, cut to black. We don't know what happens to her. Clearly, her parents and her brother crossed over. I like that part where the kid's like, the sun's shining, and he runs, and the mom runs after him, and then the dad is like, we can go. We're free now. And then she chooses to stay behind.
To fight.
Right. She's got to save some other people, and it's like, this is the hero making the sacrifice. Oh, the hero got rewarded. Damn it, I hate it when the hero gets rewarded.
Want to ask you about the final showdown between her and the villain Edgar, and she manages to kind of rally the troops and get all these girls that he's murdered over the years, because she's connected now with them with all their stuff. The original idea was to actually have all these girls appear in the front yard in the rain and force him off the yard and into oblivion or whatever, because no ghost can leave their house, apparently, is established in this film.
Sure.
And Natalie was saying that they really wanted to do that, but they, because of timing and schedules and this and that, they would have had to have gone back to this house and set up the rain. They ran out of money.
Sure.
They couldn't do it. And so they ended up with they pull them into the fog, the world, and they do all the swooshing and the visual.
You see him get incinerated
in
where he put all his victims. So I guess that, like, kills his spirit?
I guess. But yeah. I was just curious, knowing the ending that they wanted to do and the ending that they had, which was obviously much lower budget because they could just do it on a soundstage with maybe some fog machines or some additional visual effects. Which do you think would have been more effective?
Probably the one they wanted to do, because that was what was built up as, you know, you can't leave. You can't go beyond that. You know what's beyond that? Oblivion. There's mm-hmm. nothing there. It's, clearly, that's what he's afraid of. Put him there.
Right.
The other question I have, and again, this is just part of the whole, the world exists and you're not going to get the backstory, but the one question I want to know is, I understand he died in 83 and his spirit kept going and attacking and killing families and claiming more victims. But how did he claim the spirits of the people he killed before he died? What kind of occult magic was he in that when he's dead, those spirits are still tied to him and he's in control of them?
He somehow collected the souls.
Right. How did he do that?
Including his parents.
Right.
When he murdered them while he was a child.
Yeah.
We find in the film. And yeah, and then all these girls go missing and we discover that he is a serial killer that's been kidnapping these girls. And yeah, how the girls that died while he was alive.
How did he get them?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that isn't explained. And I don't know. Does it need to be explained?
Even if, like, she walked by a book that just said, like, you know, just had some occult symbols or something, it's like, okay, I guess he was mixed up in that.
Right.
Something. But instead it's like he's created this sandbox in the afterlife that he has complete control over. And I'm sitting there going, but why?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone can do this? Where's it gonna... How did that happen?
Yeah, there's a lot in there. There is a lot that's unexplained. There's a lot that's just, it happens, I guess. And, you know, the idea of him sort of, infecting or taking over, you know, the fathers that
yeah.
then end up killing the families, I thought was actually a kind of a neat twist, and that he couldn't do it all at once and that
yeah.
they could somehow even subconsciously be aware that something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, her father manages to sabotage the car. Because the method of murder is to put him in a car and just kill him with carbon monoxide.
Yeah.
And so her father subconsciously was aware of this somehow. Kind of, I like that idea. And I like the idea that she, in the end, has to get him to admit to all this in order to break him out of
yeah.
you know, the whole thing, to be awake
right.
and be aware. Lots of elements that I really liked. Even if it doesn't always make a lot of sense.
Right. There are elements that I enjoyed, that whole idea of he's claiming to have complete control over this environment that he's made, but he clearly doesn't. Because mm-hmm. if he did, he'd be able to put Lisa back to sleep. Instead, he has to threaten her
yeah.
to do that. He's lying where he's saying, like, I can make you see and do whatever I want. Well, if that were true, you'd do it by now.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have to go through all of this stuff. So he's not in complete control. And I enjoyed that aspect. He's got a lot of it,
right.
but not 100% of it.
It's still a really interesting film. I'd be curious if other people, if they haven't seen it, which I'm guessing they haven't. I mean, it's kind of this, I doubt it saw any theater time. It was probably just a direct-to-video or a VOD kind of thing. I'd be very interested if any of our listeners that haven't seen it would go and check it out and see what they think of the film. Because I think it's a film worth watching. I mean,
yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely worth watching. And in the end, you may sit there and wonder, maybe like you're like Matt, you know, I got halfway through and now I'm just waiting for it to end. Or,
yeah.
I mean, myself, I'm like, I'm looking forward to seeing how it ends. We've, of course, spoiled quite a bit of it here.
You knew what you were getting into.
Yeah, exactly. But I absolutely think it's worth watching, if nothing else, just for the lead actress, because she just does an amazing job. And it's probably what pulled me in at first, is just like, I totally believe everything that you're saying,
yeah.
that you're going through.
There are a few different points where I kept wondering, I know we've said this about a few movies, that this might make like an excellent series.
Well, it made me think of American Horror Story, the first
sure.
season of American Horror Story, Ghost House. It shares a lot of elements of that. I'm not sure when that came out. If that came out, that
similar time.
About the similar time. I don't know if it predated this or came out after, but it very similar themes.
Yeah.
On that front. So yeah, if you've seen American Story Ghost House and you enjoyed that season, go back and go watch Haunter.
Yeah. Yeah, ghost story from the point of view of the ghost is that's clever.
Mm-hmm. It's something that I guess now we've seen a little bit. We've seen a few times now,
right.
Especially since American Horror Story kind of became what it was. So we've seen that theme played out a couple times since, and then in this film. But I still think it's fairly unique, and it's something that you can play with and kind of keep your audience guessing a little bit longer than the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, anything else?
I think that's all I got. Yeah, enjoyable movie. But, yeah, just sort of had a few really good highs and then lows towards the end for me.
All right. Fair enough. Well, if anyone else has seen it, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Or if you go and seek it out because of the show, please let us know what you think after you've watched it. Send those emails, timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com, or come to the Facebook group or Twitter, wherever you like to connect. I think that's going to do it. We'll be back in a couple weeks. We actually know what we're going to watch, don't we?
We have a schedule.
We have a schedule now. And I will actually go. I edited together all the films that we wanted to watch and put it on the Facebook and the Twitter. What I'm going to go through and do now is actually go and put the dates that we're actually going to discuss these things.
So you know.
So you guys know what's coming up. What is the film we're going to be discussing in a couple weeks?
I've been wanting to discuss this for a while. 2012's Dredd. Not Judge Dredd. Carl Urban's Dredd.
And this is a film I've been wanting to watch. I don't know why I haven't. It's been on the list for me to watch because I keep hearing things about this.
I'm glad you haven't seen it. We get to talk about it.
Yes. Well, I have not seen this one. So that's going to be exciting. We're going to watch that, and in a couple weeks, we'll discuss it. So any thoughts on Dredd, fire them our way. So until then, bye, everybody.